This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Right to Life of Northeast Indiana, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Lorenzen, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Lorenzen.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is produced by Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne in cooperation with Indiana Right to Life as well as Right to Life of Northeast Indiana.
And now, the pro-life news.
Here are excerpts from a Washington Post story. On August 26, the Trump administration asked the Supreme Court to reinstate a rule requiring women seeking medication abortions to visit doctors' offices or clinics, a requirement that a Maryland federal judge lifted because of the coronavirus pandemic. Most women take the pills that end a pregnancy in its early stages at home, and the U.S. District Judge Theodore D. Chuang ruled in July that requiring an in-person visit to obtain the medications during the pandemic was unduly burdensome. At the request of abortion providers and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, Chuang imposed a nationwide injunction against the Food and Drug Administration requirement. After a panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit refused to put Chuang's order on hold, Acting Solicitor General Jeffrey B. Wall went to the Supreme Court. Medication abortions require taking two drugs, mifepristone and misoprostol, up to 10 weeks into a pregnancy. They have been in use since 2000, and in 2016, the FDA eliminated the requirement that the first drug be administered in a hospital, clinic, or doctor's office. But the FDA did not relax the requirement that the woman pick up the pills in person and sign for them.
Someone listening is a man or woman wounded by a past abortion. There's no relief from the guilt or sadness. It hurts your relationships with your other children, your spouse, those involved in the decision, and especially with God. Maybe you self-medicate with alcohol, drugs, or food. God doesn't want you to live that way. He's waiting with open arms to forgive and heal you, to bring you hope in a future. That's what Deeper Still Retreats are all about. We understand because we've been there. To find out more about Deeper Still Northern Indiana and our free retreats, go online to www.deeperstillni.org. You can also call us at 260-410-5109 or find us on Facebook and Instagram.
There's still a place for you at our fall retreat October 9th through 11th. Pre-registration is required. 260-410-5109 or www.deeperstillni.org.
If you were listening last week, you know that this week is part two of our interview with Anna, who is the writer at Lost Innocence blog, which is a blog that talks about miscarrying and not just sort of the overarching or the emotional side or talk about it in sort of a sterile way that we see in a lot of doctors' brochures or their websites. Or like if you went on Mayo Clinic, you know, it has these bullet points and you're like, let's just check down the bullet points of information. No, Lost Innocence blog goes into the nitty-gritty and the practical and, like Anna says, the icky, the things that you need to know when you're going through a miscarriage, what to expect, what do you need? If you're miscarrying at home, what are the things that you should have in your bathroom with you? Like Anna mentioned in the first part, she had lots of things with her and they all helped, but she forgot a scissors to cut the umbilical cord. Like, yes, that is a baby and it's a delivery and you're gonna need a scissors. So Lost Innocence has a goal of helping mothers through miscarriage in a very practical, very down-to-earth, and a very honest and open manner. So we have Anna Crawford back on with us for part two of this interview. And when we ended the last interview, we were beginning to talk about conversations, that people don't bring up miscarriages in conversations very often, and in part because it's painful. But Anna, I think another piece of that is that the rest of the public, their family, their friends, whoever they're telling, probably isn't very good at listening or responding to that.
No, people who haven't been through it really don't understand. And I would be angry at people for saying the wrong thing. I mean, I'm not lashing out, but inside. I would be angry and really, really hurt by people saying the wrong thing until I reflected that before I had miscarried, I could not possibly have understood the agony that is losing a baby in pregnancy. And that if they had not had that happen, they really couldn't know. And I needed to forgive them because people open their mouths and stupid things come out. We all do that. That was one thing I put on the site was for family and friends. Like, look, this is what not to say. And I said on the list, every single one of these things I have heard.
I've heard, so, yeah. And it didn't help.
It didn't help. Some of them were really, really hurtful, sort of the, well, at least you have other living children.
Yeah.
Like, well, which one of yours would you choose to lose? But nobody thinks. And they open their mouths and people are uncomfortable. They don't know what to say. And so sometimes they just say the first thing that pops in their head, which mm-hmm. is highly unlikely to be helpful. And usually what happens, I think myself, is that people, when they hear about losing a baby in pregnancy, this is something over which you have no control. And people really are afraid of the loss of control. And they're worried if they think about it, then it will happen to them. This is not a rational thing, but this is just how humans behave.
Right.
And so the way, what they want to do is say something like a Band-Aid and move on as quickly as possible, because this is really hard to think about it. And it's also really hard to grieve with somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still have very good friends who just simply grieved with me. They didn't try to fix it. They didn't try to give me rationalizations. They cried with me. They were just with me. They listened. They didn't argue. They didn't lecture. They didn't anything. They were just there. And people think, well, that's not helpful. I'm like, that is the hardest thing you can do. But that's the thing that we need to do. You know, rejoice with those who are rejoicing and grieve with those who are grieving.
Yeah. So now, Anna, you're Orthodox, and,
yes.
and I'm Lutheran, and this airs on all sorts of Christian radio stations, and I love the concept of sitting Shiva.
Oh, yeah.
That the Jews do, because that's totally it. I'm going to just sit with you, and we're just going to be in this, and I'm not going to try to escape or hide what's going on. We're just going to be in this.
Yeah.
And that way I'm accessible to you.
This happened. It's real. And here we are. And there's no escape. You're going to go through the valley of the shadow of death, but it's a lot better if people are going through it with you.
Right.
So that's the best thing, you know, that you can do. And the Jews have it nailed down. I mean, that's truly, and they do it at least. I mean, I don't know what, if every Jewish group does this, but I know that at least Orthodox Jews, they do this for a week.
Yeah,
I mean,
7 days, because that's out of the book of Job.
Yeah. Every day they come and they say prayers in the morning and they sit there and they are there for, and they don't leave the family alone. They're there for a week. And I'm not saying that you're done grieving at the end of the week, but just that act of, I'm just going to stop everything and I'm just going to be with you. It's so powerful.
I love it.
I mean, I remember, you know, and there were a lot of friends who were long distance who could not physically be there, but they were still there. They checked on me. They emailed like 6-7 times a day. They text. They just, hey, just want to let you know I'm here. I'm thinking about you right now. You let me know if there's anything I can do or you want to talk. I'll just listen. I mean, and they would keep saying that. And so I knew they were there and I felt safe. I felt like everybody had a net. Their arms were the net and I was just being held in that net. I was safe. So that's really important for family and friends to do.
Yeah. I want to, at the end of the interview, come back to this piece of what can family and friends do. So we'll move on for now, but I do want to come back to that because I think it's so important for us to talk about. Mm-hmm. All right. So we've touched on some of this stuff already, but things that people, especially moms, but also husbands, right? A lot of times they get left out of the picture. So let's bring them back into this because they are an integral part of the miscarrying experience. Or
people forget
stillbirth.
About the dads. I had a special section that's just for the men.
Perfect.
Just on the site, yeah.
One thing that we've touched on is that there's not enough practical information available for people who are in the throes of miscarrying or stillbirthing, to use a more accurate term. Things like expectant grief or, you know, that expectation of, okay, I know that this baby is dead. Now I'm birthing this baby. And like you mentioned, you had this period of time where you didn't want to look because of the expectant grief behind it. So I'm guessing that grieving is something that you deal with on your Lost Innocence blog.
Yes. Actually, grief made its way into multiple sections. I actually have one section called grief because it's kind of, you know, it's mixed in with almost everything on there. Because you can't get away from it. It's like the bubble in the linoleum. push it down, it's going to come up somewhere else.
Yeah. And it starts early and stays the whole way through and then some more. There was a, as I was, again, looking up statistics and that kind of thing for this, there's a website called Kids Health. And if anybody knows who edits that website, put their ear on this. Because at one point on their webpage, they said, remember that before long, the lost pregnancy will be a distant memory and that there is a good end in sight. And it was like, if that isn't the most callous thing I've heard.
I tell you right now, just based on my knowledge of my children, an innocent died in 2011. So that was 9 years ago. And they have not forgotten. He and the others are forever members of our family with their names and their birthdays and everything. You don't it's ludicrous to think that you're going to forget. I mean, that just doesn't.
Well, and I don't think I'd encourage a society to try to forget the babies that have been stillborn. Why would you try to forget them? Why are you trying to brush members of your family or members of society under the rug and forget about them?
Saying these are the people who don't matter.
Right.
That's so essentially what it says.
You and I, Anna, talked about how there's lots of ways that this interview about miscarrying ties into the abortion movement. And I would say that this is one of them. That in a society that's constantly trying to justify abortion, if you truly honor babies who were stillborn and miscarried, you do the abortion business a disservice because you're allowing their humanity to shine through and you're saying these people do matter. So if they matter when they're miscarried, they matter when they're aborted.
Yeah, they matter, period. And it doesn't matter how the child came into existence, whether this child was conceived just in a loving marriage or whether this is a result of rape or something else, you know, really horrible. It doesn't matter because the child is created in the image and likeness of God, and you can't look at two, you know, miscarried or aborted babies side by side and say, well, which one didn't matter?
Right.
You know, they all matter. And if you say that they all matter, then suddenly that's a big threat to the abortion industry.
Right. So grieving is something that you talk about on your website. You don't really talk about the abortion issue on your website because that's not the goal of your blog.
Yeah, that was actually very deliberate. And I think seems to have worked out well.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, this is inescapably pro-life in its witness.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be overtly pro-life because I know people who are searching for help online and come across this. I don't want to turn anyone away.
Right.
Because I don't care what happened in your past. I want to help you where you are now.
Right.
All you have to do is look at the pictures of the babies. I don't have to say a word. There they are. They're perfect little human beings. I mean, that's all I have to do. And so I think it has worked. And also, as you mentioned, I'm an Orthodox Christian. There are sections in the site devoted to prayers, which are, in my case, they're specific Orthodox Christian memorial services for the babies and whatnot. But those are in separate sections. And I didn't want the site to be beat you over the head Christian either.
Right.
Because again, I was trying to reach anybody wherever they were. And I've been gratified because I'll see pingbacks and I'll follow that and just see, okay, what's being said? How is it being used? And people will say, well, here's a good site. It is Christian, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It's very useful. And I thought that is exactly what I was trying to do because people who want to see it will see it. People who, and again, same thing with the pro-life thing. I didn't want to accidentally push anybody away. Once they get there, it speaks for itself.
Right. Yep. So. Which I think is perfect. You also have information on there about home delivery.
Yes.
And this piece sort of bleeds into the next area of our interview. So I'll put a different one first. And that is you have pictures for parents hoping to be able to identify their child once they're birthed. And we've talked a little about this already. And what to expect already.
Scared, right?
Yeah. So is there anything you want to tell the audience besides the stuff that we've already said about those pictures, about what you've got picture-wise, you know, in your sort of gallery on your website?
Sure. They're organized by gestational age. So you start at the beginning, and I actually have managed to, some people have been very fortunate. They've actually been able to see and identify a baby at a very early age. So it actually, the pictures start very early. And they go all the way down to full term, not as many toward the end, not as many in the third trimester, simply because everybody knows what just a preterm baby looks like, and that's pretty much what you have at that point, is a preemie. Everybody knows what they look like, and the site is mostly aimed at first and second trimester losses. But it just, that's because that's what's missing. So that's kind of where it's aimed. So they're all by age. Most of them are, you'll have the name or whatever name the parent chose to give the baby and how old they are. And sometimes something identified like they were born naturally at 17 weeks after dying at 13 weeks. And if there's a story that the parent submitted along with a photograph, then there's a link to the story section so that you could go read the birth story of that baby.
Yeah, which I think would be wonderfully helpful for parents too.
Yeah, they're all different. And these are not all Christians either. I mean, if you've submitted a story that is at all coherent, and yes, I've done some editing for grammar and spelling, then I will put it on there. I'm equal opportunity sharer. So,
because you're interested in presenting the real world. And this is what it looks like. So here we go.
This is real. That's not pretty. And some of these stories, I mean, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. But that's what you need. I mean, this isn't a fairy tale.
Right. So information about home delivery is a big thing you want to provide on your blog. And there's a link to that and your own story of doctors pushing these dilation and curettage procedures where there's scraping and all sorts of things going on. And so baby is not, they're not intact anymore after that. And being a surgery, it carries some other sort of health risks.
Sure.
Whereas nature has, you know, God has wired us. Women, we're women, by the way, you're incredible. God has wired our bodies to be able to deal with miscarriages and stillbirths.
You know, it takes a little time sometimes for your body to figure out, oh, we're no longer nurturing a growing baby.
Right. There's no response here.
Let that realization take place. And it takes place mentally and emotionally, too. This is not just a physical thing. They'll push you into a DNC the very next day. You're still in shock.
Yeah.
You haven't even come to terms with what's happened. So.
Yeah. And some doctors deserve to be picked on because they have horrible bedside manner and they are pushy and they're interested in getting DNCs scheduled because they're going on vacation or whatever. But not all doctors are ill-meaning. Some doctors, especially OBGYNs, are trained in intervention, right? So when something goes wrong, like a miscarriage, they're trained to step in and fix it. Exactly. I think, though, as a whole, our culture has asked them to do that too much. And now we've got, the pendulum has swung to the other side where now there's this culture of, okay, well, we'll just fix it now. And you mention how a DNC is like magic for the family, but it's not a good magic.
Not a good magic. Yeah. If you go in pregnant and you come out and you're not, and there's nothing to show that you were ever pregnant. You're discharged, you wake up in recovery, and after an hour you go home, and that's it. Women have even felt like, I feel like I'm going crazy, like, did I just make the whole thing up? I mean, people have said this to me. I can imagine exactly what you're talking about, because you can't treat a baby that was growing and has now died as I'm going in to have this growth on my foot taken off. I mean, it's just not, but it's treated the same way. It just isn't. And it is magic. I mean, going through the process of carrying the baby until you go into labor, where you're coming to terms with it, you know, you're preparing both physically and mentally, and then going into labor, delivering the baby, seeing the baby. This is the sort of closure. You complete the pregnancy.
Right.
Maybe not the way you wanted, but you saw it to the end, and that's, you need that. You can't just blink and it's all gone, because it isn't all gone. But suddenly you've got nothing to show for it, so to speak. And it's hard to even bring it up with people when you yourself are thinking, did that even really happen?
Yeah. Now, for some people, a DNC is necessary because there's a risk of infection or there's other medical things going on. And a DNC, you can't wait around for a natural miscarriage to happen.
Sometimes it's necessary, and thank God that there's something they can do when it comes to that. But, I mean, they use it like, here's your DNC, and here's a DNC and for you and one for you. And it's just, it needs to be reserved for, we are treating a problem. Miscarrying a baby is not a problem. Like, pregnancy is not a problem.
Yeah.
Having an infection is a problem. That's something.
And the medical community too. I mean, with other infections, the medical community has learned that we don't overprescribe antibiotics because your body has a way of dealing with invaders. And so we're going to let that do its job first. And if it can't, then we help. And the same view is the one that needs to be taken with stillbirth. We're going to let your body do its job first because you were wired to be able to take care of this.
Right.
And when you have trouble, when you have trouble, now we help.
Right. So, and I think that that's wonderful that there is something that can be done, but you don't have to step in every single time. It's just absolutely not necessary and harmful.
Yeah.
And I did, I'll go ahead and say on one of the, I think it was the actual process, but I have a large section that is detailing every method of dealing with this, whether it's natural miscarriage, just waiting it out, or a medical induction, or a DNC. And here's what it is, here's what happens, and here are all the pros and cons.
Right.
Because I just want to give you everything, and then you make up your own mind. Because what happens is the doctor's offices in general, I'm being general, do not give you all the information. They won't tell you the cons of a DNC, like potential later on ectopic pregnancies from scarring or an incompetent cervix that caused you to lose a baby, you know, just because they've messed up your cervix because they had to force it open, or scarring that would lead to infertility. Because the process, and nobody wants to talk about this, but the process for a DNC when you're removing a baby that has died and the associated tissue, placenta and whatnot, is exactly the same as an abortion. Medically speaking, it's exactly the same.
Right.
For a different reason. And anybody who has had to have a DNC should definitely not feel bad about that, because that is what God ordained. So that for some reason, God felt it was better that you not go through this on your own. Why? We don't know. God doesn't tell us all the reasons. But this is in his providence what he had happen, and that's fine.
Right.
So I definitely do not want anyone who has to have a DNC or who has had one to feel bad about it.
Right.
Because that's just simply what God in his providence has handed you.
Right.
And that's okay. We all have different crosses. We have different paths. We don't all have to have a natural miscarriage and it's hunky-dory. My second one was in the hospital. It wasn't at home. So, you know, it's all different.
Definitely. And there's still things. So in, you know, when you're talking about, here's some things after you birth your baby that you can do to help remember your baby and help that grieving process. You have things for after a DNC as well.
Yes.
So you do speak to that. There are, you know, you
do.
Right. You haven't messed up your grieving process somehow if you've had a DNC.
No, there are things you can do. In addition, you can, and you are legally allowed, I believe that after DNC, the any tissue collected does have to go to the lab, mostly because they have to actually make sure they didn't leave anything in you, which is important, medically speaking. That is important because they're doing it blind. It's not like they can see what they're doing. So they do have to make sure. However, after it has gone to the lab and people have said, yep, that's it, you have the legal right to take, you know, it's going to be in a container, not going to be a visible baby, but you have a right to take that baby home and bury it.
Right.
You have that legal right. People also don't know that.
Right.
It's not like, oh, well, you had a DNC. It's, you know, it's a lost cause. No. You just have to fight a little harder.
Yep, definitely. And your blog talks to that, Anna.
Yeah.
Good. We are coming up on the end of our second part. I'm hoping that we can have Anna back on to do a third part, because there's still lots more to talk about. And I want to make sure that we talk about it, because this stuff never gets talked about. So, Anna, I'll have you give me a soft agreement now. Can you come back on and do a third part sometime soon?
That's absolutely fine. Anytime you like.
Great. Thanks. We'll set that up here when we're done. So you mentioned briefly that there is that risk if you have a DNC because they force your cervix open, that could compromise your cervix. And an incompetent cervix is what causes a lot of miscarriages in subsequent pregnancies or early deliveries, which then can cause infant death because they weren't ready to be out. So there is that piece of it that doesn't get talked about. And I want to make sure that at least it's mentioned here. So you touched on this a little bit too. And so I want to go into it a little bit deeper. If you are diagnosed with a miscarriage in the hospital, your chart will say that you had a spontaneous abortion.
Yeah. Okay. So let me explain the terminology, because this is really hurtful if you don't know.
Right.
And they don't mean it to be hurtful. It's just unfortunate.
Right.
So an abortion means the ending of a pregnancy.
Right.
It is not distinguished between an abortion and an abortionary. That would be called an elective abortion. You chose to end the pregnancy. So a spontaneous abortion means you miscarried. there was no intervention. You just miscarried. You delivered the baby. A missed abortion means the baby has died. We found out about it, but you're still carrying the baby. And now we have to decide whether you're going to do expectant management, which means waiting, medical management, which means giving drugs to go into labor, or surgical management, which would be a DNC. So the term spontaneous abortion is used in place of the classic miscarriage. And it's good for people to know that so they don't panic, because that's, and there's no way to get around it. It hurts.
Right.
It hurt when I saw it. And it hurt before I ever miscarried. And I saw it on somebody's chart. I'm like, mm-hmm. That's terrible.
Yeah. You know, working at Right to Life, I've had people call the office and been really concerned. And they've said to me, you know, I was reading through my doctor's charts and it said that I had spontaneous abortion. I didn't abort my baby. And so, you know, you take the time and you explain what the term means, because it's Latin based. Yes. So abort just means to end. So even the term spontaneous abortion isn't complete. It should be spontaneous abortion of a pregnancy. But, you know, language is about efficiency. So we shorten everything down. And so abortion has come to mean elective abortion, and miscarriage has come to mean spontaneous abortion. Right. But there's a big difference there. But again, for someone who hasn't heard that explanation before, seeing spontaneous abortion on your chart referring to a miscarriage plus the terminology of a miscarriage just piles all that false guilt on top.
Oh my goodness, yes. That is why I put it on there. I thought people will see this and they will panic. The guilt piles on even more.
So they internalize it and then or heaven forbid, a husband sees it and thinks my wife did something.
Oh gosh.
And then it becomes a rift just because that term hasn't been explained.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Anna, again, thanks for joining us. So we'll come back again and do a part three. So we're sort of working through the full range of conversation that has to go with miscarriage and stillbirth. Anna, thanks so much for joining us. Why don't you give people, before we go, we've mentioned your blog title a few times, Lost Innocence, but give us how to get there.
If you actually just Google Lost Innocence, it will be one of the top things that comes up. The web address is Lost Innocence, and that is with a T, lostinnocenceblog.wordpress.com. You may come across I had to migrate it to WordPress because there was a problem with comments. I had to migrate it from Blogger. So you may actually come across, but if you actually happen upon the Blogger version, there's a link. There are no posts. There's just a link to take you to the correct site, just in case you go to the wrong one.
And we'll link to this as well. When we post this interview up on SoundCloud, we'll add the link in the description so people can just go right there and click it as well. So, all right. Thanks so much, Anna. We'll see you for phase three.
Okay. Thank you so much, Abigail. I'm honored to talk to you today.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.